of sauce dripped off the ceiling onto Grandma's head, and she retreated out of the kitchen.
"I feel like some of that cluck-in-a-bucket chicken," Grandma said. "I wouldn't mind getting the clucky dinner tray with the extra crispy chicken and mashed potatoes."
"That's a good idea," Lula said. "I could use some chicken, and I got a coupon for the clucky dinner tray."
"What about my kitchen?" I asked Lula.
"What about it?"
"It's a mess." Lula glanced at the kitchen.
"Yeah, it don't look too good. You're gonna have to use one of them degreasers on it."
"I'm not cleaning this kitchen."
"Well, somebody gotta do it," Lula said.
I narrowed my eyes at her. "That would be you."
"Huh," Lula said. "In my opinion, that pot manufacturer should be responsible for the cleanup. I got a faulty pot."
"The manufacturer in China?" I asked her.
"Yeah, that's the one. I'm gonna tell Lenny Skolnick he needs to get in touch with them."
"And you think they're going to send someone from China to clean my kitchen?"
"I see your point," Lula said. "I guess I could do some cleaning, but I'd need a stepladder. Or else, I'd need a big, strong fireman to help me out."
"I thought you pulled a gun on him."
"Yeah, but he might be persuaded to overlook that if I let him wear my dress again."
20 minutes later, Lula rolled her Firebird into the Cluck-in-a-Bucket parking lot. Cluck-in-a-Bucket is a fast food hotspot in Trenton. The food is surprisingly good if you like nice greasy chicken, heavily salted gelatinous potatoes, and gravy so thick you could walk across a vat of it. Lula, Grandma, and I gave it 5 stars. And the very best part of Cluck-in-a-Bucket is the giant red, yellow, and white chicken impaled on a 30-foot candy-striped pole that rotates high above the red-roofed building 24/7. Paris has the Eiffel Tower, New York has the Empire State Building, and Trenton has the revolving chicken. On weekends and during the dinner rush, there was always some poor sap dressed up in a Mr. Clucky chicken suit. He clucked at kids, and he danced around and annoyed the heck out of everyone. The guy who owned Cluck-in-a-Bucket thought the dancing chicken was great, but the truth was everyone would have been happy to pay more for the chicken if Mr. Clucky never clucked again. Lula was one of the 3 people out of 10,000 who liked Mr. Clucky.
"Look at here," Lula said. "It's a dancing chicken. I love that chicken. I like his red hat and his big chicken feet. I bet there's a real cute guy inside that chicken suit. You'd have to be cute to get a job as Mr. Clucky."
I was betting there was a scrawny kid with a bad complexion inside the suit. Lula got out of the car and went up to Mr. Clucky.
"You're a big Mr. Clucky," Lula said. "You must be new. I got a bet with my friend that you're a real cutie pie. How'd you like to give us a look?" "How'd you like my beak up your ass?" "Excuse me? You heard me. Fuck off, fatso." "Fatso? Did I hear you call me fatso? Because I better be mistaken." "Fatso. Fatso. Fatty, fatty, fatso."
Lula took a closer look at Mr. Clucky.
"Hold on here. I recognize your voice."
"No, you don't," Mr. Clucky said.
"Larry, is that you?" "Maybe."
Lula turned to Grandma and me.
"This is Larry, the fireman I was telling you about." "The one who wears dresses?" Grandma asked. "Yep, that's the one," Lula said. "Lots of men wear dresses," Mr. Clucky said. "It's not against the law."
"That's real true," Lula said. "And I've been reviewing our unfortunate date, and I decided you didn't look all that bad in that turquoise cocktail dress. Now that I'm thinking about it, that gown might have brought out the color of your eyes."
"Do you really think so?"
"Yeah, that gown was made for you," Lula said. "In fact, if you want to let bygones be bygones, I might let you try it on again."
"I saw you had a beaded sweater that looked like it might match," Mr. Clucky said. "Yep, you can wear the sweater, too."
He adjusted his clucky head and hiked up his privates.
"I have to work until 9.
"That's fine," Lula said. "Only thing is, I'm staying someplace else. I'll get my food and come back with my new address."
We put our orders in and moved to the pickup station.
"He seemed like a real nice chicken," Grandma said.
"Yeah," Lula said. "I guess he's not so bad. And he's a real good dancer in his chicken suit. And on top of that, I bet he could get me a discount on chicken. He just took me by surprise the other night, causing me to overreact about the dress."
We all had the clucky dinner tray, plus Lula supplemented hers with a side of biscuits and a bucket of barbecue chicken, which she said was research. She wrote my address on a napkin and handed it to Mr. Clucky when we left.
"It must be fun to be Mr. Clucky," Lula said to him.
"Yeah, the suit is pretty cool, and I get to dance around. Mostly I do it for spending money, though.
I do okay as a fireman, but nice handbags don't come cheap.
We all piled into the Firebird, and Lula drove a couple blocks to the supermarket.
I'll be right back, Lula said. I just got to get some cleaning products.
I'll go with you, Grandma said. We could take another look at the barbecue aids.
I stayed in the car and called Ranger. Just checking in, I said. Anything interesting going on?
Nada. And you?
Lula and Grandma exploded a pot of barbecue sauce in my kitchen. Lula has a date later tonight with Mr. Clucky, and it looks like I'll be spending the night in your apartment again.
Something to look forward to, Ranger said. Do you have any thoughts on my accounts?
Yes, I picked out several that I think have break-in potential. I gave him the addresses and told him Vinny was having a cow over my open files. I'm going to need some time off tomorrow to look for one of these guys, I said.
Done, Ranger said,
and he disconnected. Lula swung her ass out of the supermarket, and Grandma trotted behind her. They hustled across the lot to the car. Lula rammed herself behind the wheel, and in moments we were back on the road.
Next stop is my house, Lula said. I gotta get clothes for Larry.
Grandma leaned forward from the back seat.
What if the killers are waiting for you?
That would be good luck, Lula said. We could take them down and get the reward. I'd shoot the heck out of them, and then we'd drag their carcasses to the police station.
We'd kick their asses, Grandma said.
Damn Skippy, Lula said.
Lula eased the Firebird to the curb in front of her house, and we all piled out. Lula lived in an emerging neighborhood of hardworking people. Homes were small, yards were postage stamp size, and aspirations were modest. Lula rented half of the second floor of a two-story Victorian house that had been painted lavender with pink gingerbread trim. It was possibly the most inappropriate house in the entire universe for Lula. It was too small, too dainty, and too lavender. Every time I saw her walk through the front door, I had the feeling she was going through a portal into another dimension, like Harry Potter at the train station. We got to the top of the stairs and gaped at Lula's bullet hole-riddled door. Yellow and black crime scene tape had been plastered over the door, but it hadn't been applied in such a way that it prevented the door from being used.
Cheap-ass plywood hollow-core door, Lula said. Birdshot would go through this crap-ass door.
Grandma and I followed Lula into the one-room apartment and waited by the door while she went to her giant closet.
This won't take long, Lula said. I got everything organized in here by collection, so depending who I want to be, it's easy to find.
Lula opened her closet door, and two men jumped out at her. One had a gun, and the other had a cleaver, and they were both wearing gorilla masks.
It's the killers! It's the killers! Lula shrieked.
Grab her, the cleaver guy said. Hold her still so I can chop off her head.
And then he giggled, and all the hair stood up on my arm. His partner was trying to sight his gun on Lula.
For crying out loud, get out of the way and let me shoot her. Big deal, you're a butcher. Get over it.
The guy with the cleaver swung out at Lula, giggling the whole time. Lula ducked, and the cleaver got stuck in the wall. Lula scrambled hands and knees under a table, around an overstuffed chair, outer door, and thundered down the stairs. The killers ran after Lula, not even noticing Grandma and me standing with our eyes bugged out and our mouths open.
Don't that beat all, Grandma said.
She hauled her .45 long barrel out of her big black patent leather purse, stepped into the hall, planted her feet, and squeezed off a couple shots at the two guys running down the stairs. The gorilla guys disappeared out the front door into the night. There was the sound of car doors opening and slamming shut. An engine caught, and I heard the car drive away. A moment later, Lula appeared at the front door. She had a bunch of leaves stuck in her hair and a big dirt smudge on her wraparound blouse.
What happened? She said. I don't hardly remember anything except I fell in a big bush.
It was the killers, Grandma said. We kicked their ass.
Oh, yeah. Now it's all coming back to me.
Lula climbed the stairs and sleepwalked through her door.
It's a nightmare, she said. It's a friggin' nightmare.
Grandma rooted through Lula's cabinets in the little kitchenette area of the room and came up with a bottle of Jack Daniels. She took a pull from the bottle and handed it over to Lula.
This'll fix you up, Grandma said. Take a snort of this.
Lula chugged some Jack Daniels and looked a little better.
This is bullshit, she said. This gotta end.
Chapter 10.
I took Grandma home, and then I drove to my apartment building and walked Lula into the apartment.
"Smells like barbecue in here," Lula said.
It looked like barbecue. "Are you going to be okay?" I asked Lula.
"Yeah, I'm fine. I'm going to hang my Dolly Parton dress and sweater up and get to work. I want to be working when Larry gets here."
"You should call Morelli."
"I guess, but I don't see where it does any good."
"He's working on finding these guys, and it gives him a more complete picture. And, most important, it probably annoys the hell out of him and interrupts whatever he's doing."
"What's with you two?" Lula said. "Are you really calling it quits?"
"Hard to say. Every time we see each other, we get into an argument. We don't agree on anything."
"Sounds to me like you're talking about the wrong things. Why don't you talk about other things? Like, you can make a list of things you won't fight over, and then you only talk about those things."
"I think he might be seeing Joyce Barnhart."
"What?"
Lula's eyes almost popped out of her head.
"I hate Joyce Barnhart. She's a devil woman, and she's a skank. Men have relations with her, and their dicks fall off. If I was you and I found out Morelli was fooling around with Joyce Barnhart, I'd dropkick his ass clear across the state."
I wrapped my arms around the hamster cage. "I'm taking Rex to Range Man while you clean the kitchen."
"That's a good idea," Lula said. "We don't want to traumatize him with cleaning fumes, and he might not want to see a giant hairy man in a turquoise cocktail dress. I'm not sure I even want to see it."
I set Rex's cage on the counter in Ranger's kitchen and scrubbed the barbecue sauce off the glass sides. "This is temporary," I said to Rex. "Don't get attached to Ranger. I know he's strong and sexy, and I know he smells nice, and he has good food, and his apartment is always the right temperature. Problem is, he's got secrets, and he's not in the market for a wife." "Okay, so the wife thing might not be a deal-breaker since I'm having commitment issues anyway, but the secrets he carries are troublesome." I gave Rex fresh water and a chunk of bread, and I poured myself a glass of red wine. I took the wine into Ranger's small den, got comfy on the couch, and clicked the television on. I watched an hour-long show on Spain on the Travel Channel, and after that I couldn't find anything of interest. I dropped one of Ranger's t-shirts over my head by way of pajamas, crawled between his orgasmic sheets, and couldn't decide if I wanted him to come home early or stay away until morning. I came awake with a start, not knowing where I was for a moment, and then remembering. Ranger's bed. I looked at the clock. 6:20 a.m. The light was on in the bathroom. Ranger emerged, still dressed in rangeman tactical gear. He came to his side of the bed and kicked his shoes off.
"Either get out of the bed or else take your clothes off," he said. "I'm not in a mood to compromise."
"You've been working for 18 hours. You're supposed to be tired."
"I'm not that tired."
He removed his watch and set it on the bedside chest.
"I saw Rex in the kitchen. Is this going to be an extended stay?"
"Would that be a problem?"
"We'd have to negotiate terms."
"Rent?"
"Sex and closet space," Ranger said.
I heaved myself out of bed. "If you sleep on my side, it's already warm." I took a shower, dried my hair, and tiptoed past Ranger. He looked dangerous even in sleep, with a beard that was 8 hours past 5 o'clock shadow, and a shock of silky brown hair falling across his forehead. I dressed in rangeman black. I grabbed a sweatshirt and went to the kitchen to say hello to Rex. "Remember what I said about Ranger," I told Rex. But I'm not sure Rex cared. Rex was asleep in his soup can. I pocketed my rangeman key fob, hung my bag on my shoulder, and took the stairs to the fifth floor. Hal and Ramon were sitting at a table in the kitchen. Ramon looked fresh as a daisy. Hal looked like he just came off a shift. I got coffee and a bagel and joined them. "What's going on?" I asked them.
Same old," Ramon said.
Hal didn't say anything. Hal looked like he was asleep with a spoon in his hand. "Earth to Hal," I said. Ramon cut his eyes to Hal.
"Hal's working a double shift in the car."
"It's killing me," Hal said. "I don't know if it's morning or night anymore."
"Big guys like Hal need sleep," Ramon said. "Wiry little guys like me can do with less, and people who aren't exactly human like Ranger hardly need sleep at all."
"When we find out who's doing these break-ins, I'm gonna personally beat the crap out of them," Hal said. "Then I'm gonna sleep for a week."
I ate my bagel, and when Hal and Ramon left for parts unknown, I took a second cup of coffee to my desk. Aside from a couple men looking a little bedraggled from double shifts, everything was business as usual. I ran employee background checks for a startup company in Whitehorse for almost 3 hours. My ass didn't cramp in my new chair, but my mind went numb from the tedium of staring at the screen. At 10 o'clock, I stopped working for Rangeman and pulled Vinny's remaining 3 current files from my bag. Ernie Dell was wanted for setting fire to several abandoned buildings at the bombed-out end of Stark Street. The strip of Stark was so bleak and devoid of anything resembling civilized society that only a whacked-out crazy person like Ernie Dell would set foot there. Ernie was my age, and for as long as I've known him, which is pretty much my whole life, Ernie has been handicapped with a shape like a butternut squash. Narrow, gourd-like head, narrow shoulders, huge butt. The second guy on my list was Myron Kaplan. Myron was 78 years old, and for reasons not given in my file, Myron robbed his dentist at gunpoint. At first glance, this would seem like an easy apprehension, but my experience with old people is that they don't go gently into the night. That left Cameron Manfred. If I asked Ranger to help me with an apprehension, this is the one I'd choose. Manfred didn't look like a nice guy. He was 26 years old, and this was his third arrest for armed robbery. He'd been charged with rape 2 years ago, but the charge didn't stick. He'd also been accused of assault with a deadly weapon. The victim, who was a rival gang member, lost his hearing and right eye and had almost every bone in his body broken, refused to testify, and the charges were dropped for insufficient evidence. Manfred lived in the projects and worked for a trucking company. His booking photos show 2 teardrops tattooed onto his face. Gang members were known to tattoo a teardrop below their eye when they killed someone. I left a text message to Ranger that I'd be away from Rangeman on my cell phone. I stuffed myself into my sweatshirt, swiped a couple granola bars from the kitchen, and took the elevator to the garage. Traffic was light at mid-morning. Gray sky. The temperature was in the 50s. It felt cold for September. I parked in front of the bonds office behind a truck that was repairing the front window. Connie was inside, and Lula was nowhere to be seen.
"She called a couple minutes ago," Connie said. "She said she was having a wardrobe issue, but she'd solved it, and she was coming into work."
The door banged open, and Lula waddled in, dressed in a flak vest and riot helmet.
"Is it all safe in here?" she asked. "You check the back room and all right. I'm not taking no chances until those Chipotle killers are caught."
"Did you drive here dressed like that?" I asked her.
"Yeah, and it wasn't easy. I'm sweating like a pig in this, and this helmet is gonna ruin my hairdo, but it's better than having my head ventilated with bullet holes."
"Did you talk to Morelli this morning?"
"I did. Jeez Louise, he was in a mood. That man needs to get some. He was cranky."
I tried not to look too happy about that. "Have they made any progress finding the killers?"
"He said they had an out-of-town lead."
"Are you going to take that helmet off, or are you wearing it all day?" Connie asked.
"I guess I could take it off in here."
"I'm looking for Ernie Dell today," I said to Lula. "Do you want to ride shotgun?"
"Is he the firebug?"
"Yep."
"I'm in."
"I don't mind if you wear the flak vest," I told her. "But I'm not riding around with you in the helmet. You look like Darth Vader."
"Okay, but I'm going to hold you responsible if I get killed."
Ernie lived alone in a large house on State Street. No one knew how he got the house, since no one could ever remember Ernie having a job. Ernie alternately claimed to be a movie producer, a stockbroker, a race car driver, and an alien. I thought alien was a good possibility. I idled in front of his house, and Lula and I craned our necks and gaped up at it. It was on about a half acre on a hill high above the street. Shingles had blown off the roof and lay sprinkled across the yard. Window frames were down to bare wood and were splintered and split. The clabbered siding was charcoal gray. I wasn't sure if it was water stain, battleship paint, or mold.
"Holy crap," Lula said. "Are you shitting me? Someone lives in that? It's falling apart, and there must be 100 steps to get up the hill. I'll get shin splints climbing those steps."
"There's an alley behind the house, and there's a back driveway and a 2-car garage." I drove around the block, took the alley, and parked in Ernie's driveway.
"What's the deal with this guy?" Lula asked. "Has he always set fires?"
I thought back to Ernie as a kid.
I can't remember him setting fires, but he did a lot of weird things. One time, he entered a talent show and tried to burp the Star Spangled Banner, but he was hauled off the stage halfway through. And then he went through a period where he was sure he could make it rain, and he'd start chanting strange things in the middle of arithmetic. Ooh-wah-doo-wah-moo-moo-hoo-ha.
Did it rain?
Sometimes.
What else did he do? I'm starting to like this guy.
He took a goat to the prom, dressed it up in a pink ballerina outfit, and he went through a fireworks stage. You'd wake up at 2 in the morning, and fireworks would be going off in your front yard. We got out of the escort, and I transferred Cuss from my purse to my back pocket for easier access. We don't want to spook him if he's home, I said to Lula. We're just going to walk to the back door and be calm and friendly. Let me do the talking.
Why do you get to do the talking?
I'm the apprehension agent.
What am I, then?
You're my assistant.
Maybe I don't want to be the assistant. Maybe I want to be the apprehension agent.
You have to talk to Vinny about that. Your name is to be on the documentation.
We could write me in. I got a pen.
Good grief.
How about if I just say hello?
Fine. Terrific. Say hello. I knocked on the back door, and Ernie answered in his underwear.
Hello, Lula said.
Ernie looked like he just rolled out of bed. His thinning, sandy blonde hair was every which way on his head.
What's up? He asked.
You missed your court date, I said. You need to go downtown with me and reschedule.
Sure, he said. Wait in the front room while I get dressed.
We followed him through the kitchen that was circa 1942, down a hall with peeling faded wallpaper, and into the living room. The living room floor was bare, scarred wood. The furniture was minimal. A lumpy secondhand couch. 2 folding chairs with the funeral home's name engraved on the back. A rickety end table had been placed between the 2 folding chairs. No lamps, no television.
I'll be right back, Ernie said, heading for the stairs. Make yourself comfortable.
Lula looked around.
How are we supposed to get comfortable?
You could sit down, I told her. Lula sat on one of the folding chairs, and it collapsed under her weight.
Fuck,
she said, spread eagle on the floor with the chair smashed under her.
I bet I broke a bone.
Which bone did you break?
I don't know. Pick one. They all feel broke.
Lula struggled to her feet and felt around, testing out her bones. Ernie was still upstairs getting dressed, but I didn't hear him walking overhead. I went to the bottom of the stairs and called. Ernie? Nothing. I climbed the stairs and called his name again. Silence. 4 rooms plus a bathroom led off the center hall. 1 room was empty. 1 room was filled with bizarre junk. Store mannequins with broken arms, gallon cans of cooking oil, stacks of bundled newspapers, boxes of firecrackers and rockets, gallon cans of red paint, a wooden crate of rusted nails, a birdcage, a bike that looked like it had been run over by a truck, and God only knows what else. The 3rd room housed a 60-inch plasma television, an elaborate computer station, and a movie house popcorn machine. A new leather Lazy Boy recliner sat in the middle of the room and faced the television. The 4th room was his bedroom. A sleeping bag and pillow had been thrown onto the floor of the 4th room. Clothes were scattered around in no special order. Some looked clean, and some looked like they'd been worn a lot. The window was open in the bedroom, and 2 large hooks wrapped over the windowsill. I crossed the room to the window and looked down. Rope ladder. The sort you might stash in a room as a fire precaution. I ran downstairs and headed for the kitchen.
He's gone!
Lula and I reached the back door just as an engine caught in the garage, and a baby diarrhea green VW bug chugged out to the alley. We ran for the escort, jumped in, and took off. I could see the bug 2 blocks away. Ernie turned right, and I floored it, bouncing along the potholed service road. I turned right and caught a flash of green 1 block away. I was gaining on him.
Do you smell something? Lula asked.
Like what?
I don't know, but it's not good.
I was concentrating on driving and not on smelling. Ernie was going in circles. He was driving a 4-block grid.
It's like a cat was burning, Lula said. I never actually smelled a cat burning, but if I did, it would smell like this. And do you think it's getting smoky in here?
Smoky?
Yow, Lula said. Your back seat is on fire. I mean, it's an inferno. Let me out of this car. Pull over. I wasn't meant to be extra crispy.
I screeched to a stop, and Lula and I scrambled out of the car. The fire raced along the upholstery and shot out the windows. Flames licked from the undercarriage, and broosh! The car was a fireball. I looked up the street and saw the pea-green VW lurking at the corner. The car idled for a few moments and sedately drove away.
"How long do you think it's going to take the fire trucks to get here?" Lula wanted to know.
"Not long. I hear sirens."
"This is going to be embarrassing. This is the second thing we burned up this week."
I dialed Ranger. "Did I wake you?" I asked.
"No, I'm up and functioning. I just got a report that the GPS unit we attached to your car stopped working."
"You know how when you toast a marshmallow, it catches fire and gets all black and melted?"
"Yeah."
"That would be my car."
"Are you okay?"
"Yes, but I'm stranded," I told him.
"I'll send Tank."
I watched the fire truck disappear down the street, followed by the last remaining cop car. What was left of my escort was on a flatbed.
"Where do you want me to take this?" the flatbed guy asked me.
"Dump it in the river."
"You got it,"
he said, and he climbed into the cab and he rumbled away.
"Guess you gotta be careful when you're going after someone who likes fire," Lula said.
I had a shiny new black Porsche Cayenne waiting for me. Tanka dropped it off, made sure I didn't need help, and returned to Rangeman. The car was one of several cars in Ranger's personal fleet. It was immaculate inside, with no trace of Ranger other than a secret drawer under the driver's seat. The drawer held a loaded gun. All cars in Ranger's personal fleet had guns hidden under the seat. I remoted the car open, and Lula and I got in.
"Now what?" Lula said.
"Lunch."
"I like that idea. And I think we should take something to Larry on account of he's still working on your kitchen."
"It sounds like things went okay last night."
"One thing you learn when you're a hoe is there's all kinds in this world. Being a hoe is a broadening experience. It's not just all hand jobs, you know. It's listening to people sometimes and trying to figure out how to make them happy. That's why I was a good hoe. I didn't charge by the hour."
"And Larry fits in there somewhere?"
"Yeah. He's a real interesting person. He was a professional wrestler. His professional name was Lady Death. But he was one of them niche market wrestlers, and his feelings got hurt when the fans didn't like him in his pink outfits. So he quit, and he got a job as a fireman. Turns out he's a hottie, too. He likes wearing ladies' clothes, but he isn't gay."
We decided Larry was probably tired of chicken, so we got ham and cheese and hot pepper subs and brought them back to my apartment.
"Boy, that's great of you to bring me lunch," Larry said. "I'm starving."
He was still wearing the Dolly Parton number. It had a fitted bodice with spaghetti straps and a swirly chiffon skirt, and there was a lot of chest hair and back hair sticking out of the top of the dress. There was also a lot of armpit hair, leg hair, and knuckle hair. He'd accessorized the dress with heels and rubber gloves.
"I know this looks funny," he said, "but I like to feel pretty when I clean."
"Go for it," I told him. And I meant it. I didn't care what he was wearing as long as I was getting barbecue sauce removed from my walls. My cell phone buzzed, and I recognized Morelli's number.
"I'm trying to find Lula," he said. "I called the office, and they said she was with you."
"Why didn't you just call her cell?"
"She's not answering her cell."
"Do you want to talk to her?"
"I need to show her a photograph. Where are you?"
"We're in my apartment."
"Stay there. I'm a couple minutes away."
"That was Morelli," I said to Lula. "He's coming here with a photograph he wants you to look at. He said you're not answering your cell phone."
"It's out of juice. I forgot to plug it in."
5 minutes later, I opened my door to Morelli. He looked at me in my rangeman clothes, and the line of his mouth tightened.
"Why don't I just lay down in the parking lot and let you run over me a couple times? It will be less painful."
"Been there, done that," I said. The bright red splotches in my kitchen caught his attention.
"Remodeling?"
he asked. "Pressure cooker full of barbecue sauce." That got a smile.
"Where's Lula?"
"Eating lunch in the dining room." The smile widened when Morelli walked into the dining room and eyeballed Lula in her flak vest and Larry in his cocktail dress.
"This here's Larry," Lula said to Morelli. "He's Mr. Clucky." "I'm a fireman full-time," Larry said. "Being Mr. Clucky is my part-time job."
Morelli extended his hand.
"Joe Morelli, isn't it early in the day for a cocktail dress?"
"I guess," Larry said, but I stayed over, and this was all I had to wear.
Morelli cut his eyes to me.
He stayed over?
It's complicated.
I bet.
Are those pictures you're holding for me? Lula asked. You need to be figuring this out, because I'm getting tired of this kill Lula bullshit.
Morelli gave her the photos, and Lula flipped through them.
This one, Lula said. This guy with a bad haircut and nose like Captain Hook. He's one of the killers. He's the one with the meat cleaver.
That's Marco the Maniac, Morelli said.
Oh, shit, Lula said. I got a killer named Maniac. Where's my helmet? I need my helmet. I think I left it at the office.
His profile finally popped out of the system, Morelli said. He's from Chicago, works as a butcher, but he makes spare change by chopping off fingers and toes of people who annoy the Chicago mob. Mostly gets off on insufficient evidence, but did some time a couple years ago. I don't know how he's connected to Chipotle. I'm assuming it was a contract hit, but we don't really know.
You're gonna arrest him, right? Lula said.
As soon as we find him.
Well, what are you doing standing here? Lula said. You gotta mobilize or something. Put out one of them APB things. I need all my fingers and toes. I got some Via Spiga sandals that aren't gonna look right if I only got 9 toes. And what about the guy with the gun? Why don't you got a picture of him?
We're working on it, Morelli said.
Working out of my ass, Lula said. I'm getting the runs. I need a donut.
Morelli grabbed my wrist and tugged me to the door.
I need to talk to you alone, he said, moving me into the hall and down toward the elevator.
I don't want to argue about Range Man, I told him.
I don't care about Range Man, Morelli said, his voice cracking with laughter. I want to know about the guy in the dress. What the heck is that about?
Lula exploded the barbecue sauce in my kitchen and didn't want to clean it up, so she told this crossdresser he could wear her dress if he scrubbed the sauce off the walls and ceiling.
And he spent the night?
Lula's guest.
The crime lab got to her apartment first thing this morning. She can change out that door anytime she wants.
I'm not sure she'll go back there. She's really freaked.
From what I can tell, Marco is an animal with a very small brain. He's dangerous and disgusting, but not smart. At the risk of sounding insensitive, Lula is a large target, and anyone else would have killed her by now.
So you think she shouldn't be worried?
I think she should be terrified. If this goes on long enough, Marco is going to get lucky, and Lula is going to lose a lot more than a toe.
He punched the elevator button.
Is that Ranger's Cayenne in your parking lot?
A small sigh escaped before I could squelch it. I tried to capture Ernie Dell, but he torched my car and got away. Ranger gave me a loaner. The elevator doors opened, and Morelli stepped inside. How close are you to catching Marco? I asked him.
Not close enough.
I returned to the apartment and finished my lunch.
We should have got dessert, Lula said. I don't know what we were thinking about not getting dessert.
You have to stop obsessing about food, I told her. You're going to weigh 400 pounds.
Are you saying I'm fat? Because I think I'm just a big and beautiful woman.
You're still beautiful, I said, but I think the big is getting a little bigger.
That's a valid point, Lula said.
She locked onto Larry.
Do you think I'm fat?
Larry was deer in headlights. He'd already traveled this road.
Well, you're not too fat, he said.
Not too fat for what? Lula wanted to know.
For me, for this dress. I'm sure you look much better in this dress than I do.
Damn right, Lula said. Take that dress off and I'll show you. This dress fits me perfect.
Larry stood and reached for the zipper, and I clapped my hands over my eyes.
It's okay, Larry said to me. I'm wearing boxers. I didn't have any nice lingerie with me.
It doesn't matter, I said. I don't want to see Lula either. Tell me when it's over.
Well, what the heck is wrong with this dress?
Lula said a couple minutes later.
I can't get this thing together.
I opened my eyes, and Lula had the dress on, but it wasn't zipped. There was fat bulging out everywhere, and Larry had his knee against Lula's back and was two-handing the zipper, trying to pull it up.
Suck it in, Larry said. I have this problem sometimes, too.
I'm all sucked, Lula said. I can't suck no more.
Veins were standing out in Larry's temples and bulging in his neck.
I'm getting it, he said. I can press 200 pounds, and there's no reason why I can't get this zipper closed.
The heck there wasn't. The dress wasn't made out of spandex, and even spandex had limits.
I've almost
Got it, Larry said, sweat dripping off his flushed face, running in rivers down his chest. I've got an inch to go. One lousy, motherfucking, cocksucking inch.
Lula was standing tall, not moving a muscle.
Yeah, baby, Larry said. I got it. Woohoo! Yeah!
He stepped back and pumped his fist and did a white boy shuffle in his boxers. Lula still wasn't moving. Her eyes were all wide and bulging, and she was looking not so brown as usual.
Can't breathe, Lula whispered. Feel faint.
And then, pow! The zipper let loose and Lula flopped onto the floor, gasping for air. Larry and I peered down at her.
Maybe I could use to lose a pound or two, Lula said.
We got Lula out of the dress and back into her marigold yellow stretch slacks, matching scoop neck sweater and black flak vest. And neither of us mentioned that she looked like a giant bumblebee.
Are you okay? Larry asked her. Pretty much, but I need a donut.
No donuts, Larry and I said in unison.
Oh yeah, Lula said. I forgot.
I have to get back to work, I said to Lula. Are you coming with me?
I guess, Lula said. But we gotta stop at your mama's house. Your granny was supposed to cook up a recipe I gave her.
Chapter 11. My mother and Grandma Mazur were in the kitchen. My mother was at the stove stirring red sauce, and Grandma was at the sink drying pots stacked in the Rubbermaid dish drainer.
I made up the recipe just like you said, Grandma told Lula. And then I put the sauce on some pulled pork. It's in the casserole dish in the refrigerator.
How does it taste? Lula asked. What do you think of it?
It tastes okay, but I got the trots as soon as I ate it. I've been in the bathroom ever since. I got hemorrhoids on hemorrhoids.
Get it out of the refrigerator before your father gets hold of it, my mother said to me. Bad enough I've got your grandmother running upstairs every 10 minutes. I don't want to have to listen to the two of them fighting over who gets in first. I took the casserole dish out of the refrigerator and lifted the lid. It looked good, and it smelled great. Do you want to try some? I asked Lula.
Ordinarily, Lula said, but I'm on a diet. Maybe you should taste it.
Not in 100 years, I told her.
It could just be a fluke that your granny got the trots, Lula said. It could be one of them anemones.
I think you mean anomaly.
Yeah, that's it.
We're having ham tonight, my mother said to me. And pineapple upside down cake. You should bring Joseph to dinner. I'm not seeing him anymore.
Since when?
Since weeks ago. Do you have a new boyfriend? No, I'm done with men. I have a hamster. That's all I need. That's a shame, my mother said. It's a big ham. I'll come to dinner, I said. I love ham.
No Joseph?
No Joseph. I'll take his share home and eat it for lunch tomorrow.
I know what we can do with this casserole, Lula said. We can take it to the office and feed it to Vinny. He don't care what he puts in his mouth.
I thought that sounded like a decent idea, so I carted the pulled pork out to Ranger's Porsche and carefully set it in on the floor in the back. Lula and I buckled ourselves in, and I headed for Hamilton Avenue.
Holy cats, Lula said, half a block away from the office. You see that car parked on the other side of the street? It's the bushy-headed killer. It's Marco the Maniac. He's sitting there waiting to kill me.
Don't panic, I said. Get his license plate. I'm dialing Morelli.
It's them or me, she said,
launching herself over the console onto the back seat, powering the side window down.
This is war.
Stay calm. Are you getting the license number?
Call my ass.
And she stuck her Glock out the window and squeezed off about 15 shots at the two guys in the car.
Eat lead, she yelled. You sons of bitches.
Bullets ricocheted off metal wheel covers and bit into fiberglass, but clearly none hit their intended mark, because the car took off and was doing about 80 miles per hour before it even got to the corner. I hung a U-turn in front of the bonds office, sending oncoming cars scrambling onto curbs, screeching to a stop. Lula had discarded the flak vest, rammed herself through the side window, and was half in and half out, still shooting at the car in front of us.
Stop shooting, I yelled at her. You're going to kill someone.
The car turned left onto Olden, and I was prevented from following by heavy traffic.
Get back into the car, I said to Lula. I've lost them.
I can't get back, Lula said. I'm stuck.
I looked over my shoulder at Lula. All I could see was bright yellow ass. The rest of her was out the window.
"Stop fooling around," I told her.
"I'm not fooling. I'm stuck."
Cars were passing and honking.
"Yo ass," Lula said to the cars.
I checked her out in my side mirror and saw that not only was she stuck, but her boobs had fallen out of the scoop-neck sweater and were blowing in the wind. I turned onto a side street and pulled to the curb to take a look. By the time I got out of the car, I was laughing so hard tears were rolling down my cheeks and I could hardly see.
"I don't see why this is so funny," Lula said. "Get me out of the window. I'm about freezing my nipples off. It's not like it's summer or something."
Short of lubing Lula up with goose grease, I didn't know where to begin.
"Do you think it's better if I pull or push?" I asked her.
"I think you should pull. I don't think I'm going to get my titties and my belly back through the window. I think my ass is smaller, and I don't want no wisecracking comment on that, neither."
I latched onto her wrists, planted my feet, and pulled, but she didn't budge.
"I'm losing circulation in my legs," Lula said. "You don't get me out of here soon. I'm going to need amputation."
I went around to the other side, got into the back seat, and almost fainted at the sight of the big yellow butt in front of me. I broke into a nervous giggle and instantly squashed it. "Get it together," I told myself. "This is serious stuff. She could lose the use of her legs." I put my hands on her ass and shoved. Nothing. No progress. I put my shoulder to her and leaned into it. Ditto. Still stuck. I got out of the Porsche and went around to take another look from the front.
"Maybe I should call roadside assistance," I said to Lula. "Or the fire department."
"I don't feel so good," Lula said.
And she farted.
"Jeez Louise," I said. "Could you control yourself? This is Ranger's Porsche."
"I can't help it. I'm just a big gas bag. I still got leftover barbecue gas."
She squeezed her eyes tight shut and did a full minute-long fart.
"Excuse me," she said.
I was horrified and impressed all at the same time. It was a record-breaking fart. On my best day, I couldn't come near to farting like that.
"I feel a lot better," Lula said. "Look at me. I got room in the window opening."
She wriggled a little and eased herself back into the SUV.
"I'm not so fat after all," she said. "I was just all swelled up."
My cell phone buzzed, and I saw from the screen that it was Morelli.
"Did I miss a call from you?" he asked.
"Yeah, Marco and his partner were parked in front of the bonds office. They were in a black Lincoln Town Car. I didn't get their license. I followed them to Olden and then lost them."
"I'll put it on the air."
"Thanks." 10 minutes later, Lula and I trudged into the office with the casserole and came face to face with Joyce Barnhart. Joyce had been a pudge when she was a kid, but over the years the fat had shifted to all the right places. Plus, she'd had some sucked out and added some here and there. Truth is, most of the original equipment had been altered one way or another, but even I had to admit the end result was annoyingly spectacular. She had a lot of flame-red hair that she did up in waves and curls. Hard to tell which of it was hers and which was bought. Not that it mattered when she swung her ass down the street in spike-heeled boots, skin-tight low-rider jeans, and black satin bustier. She wore more eye makeup than Tammy Faye and had lips that were inflated to bursting.
"Hello, Joyce," I said. "Long time no see."
"I guess you could say that to Morelli, too," Joyce said.
Lula cut her eyes to me.
"You want me to shoot her? 'Cause I'd really like to do that. I still got a few bullets left in my gun."
"Thanks, but not today," I said to Lula. "Some other time."
"Just let me know when."
"So what are you doing here in the slums?" I asked her.
"Ask Connie."
"Vinny hired her again," Connie said. "He decided you weren't bringing the skips in fast enough, so he brought Joyce in to take up the slack."
"I don't take up slack," Joyce said. "I take the cream off the top."
From time to time, Joyce had worked for Vinny, mostly because she was good with a whip, and once in a while, Vinny felt like a very bad boy.
"What's in the casserole?" Joyce asked.
I opened the lid. "It's barbecue. Grandma Mazur made it for me for dinner. She knows how I love this recipe." Joyce spit on the pulled pork.
"Just like old times," she said. "Remember when I used to spit on your lunch in school?"
"How about now?" Lula asked. "Can I shoot her now?"
"No."
Joyce took the casserole dish from me.
Yum, she said. Dinner. And then she sashayed out of the bond's office, got into her black Mercedes, and roared off down the street with the barbecue.
I got a dilemma here now, Lula said. I don't know whether I want her to like my barbecue sauce or get the squirts from it.
Finney stuck his head out of the office.
Where is she? Did she leave? Christ, she scares the crap out of me. Still, there's no getting around it. She's a man-eater. She'll clean up the list.
Connie and Lula and I did a collective eye roll because Joyce had tried her hand at bounty hunting before, and the only man she ate was Vinny. Am I fired? I asked Vinny.
No, you're the B team.
You can't have an A team and a B team going after the same skips. It doesn't work.
Make it work, Vinny said.
We should have saved the barbecue for Vinny, I said to Lula.
Wasn't me to give Barnhart the barbecue, Lula said. I wanted to shoot her.
I hiked my bag onto my shoulder. I'm out of here. I'm going to see if Myron Kaplan is home.
I'm with you, Lula said. I'm not staying here with this Barnhart hiring idiot.
What about the filing? Vinny yelled at Lula. The stacks of files everywhere.
File my ass, Lula said.
According to the information Connie gave me, Myron Kaplan was 78 years old, lived alone, and was a retired pharmacist. And 2 months ago, he robbed his dentist at gunpoint. Myron's booking photo is mostly nose. Several other photos taken when bail was written show Myron to be slightly stooped with sparse, wild gray hair.
There it is,
Lula said, checking house numbers while I crept down Carmichael Street.
That's his house with the red door.
Carmichael was a quiet little side street in the center of the city. Residents could walk to shops, restaurants, coffee houses, corner groceries, and, in Myron's case, his dentist. The street was entirely residential with narrow, brick-faced, two-story row houses. I parked at the curb, and Lula and I walked to the small front stoop. I rang the bell, and we both stepped aside in case Myron decided to shoot through his door. He was old, but he was known to be armed, and we'd been shot at a lot lately. The door opened, and Myron looked at me and then focused on Lula in the yellow stretch suit and black flak vest.
What the heck?
Myron asked.
Don't mess with me, Lula said. I'm off donuts, and I feel mean as a snake.
You look like a big bumblebee,
Myron said.
I thought I slept through October, and it was Halloween.
I introduced myself and explained to Myron he'd missed his court date.
I'm not going to court,
Myron said.
I already told that to the lady who called on the phone. I got better things to do.
Like what? Lula wanted to know.
Like watch television.
Myron had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. He was gumming it around, sucking in smoke and blowing it out all at the same time.
That's disgusting, Lula said. You shouldn't be smoking. Didn't your doctor tell you not to smoke?
My doctor's dead,
Myron said.
Everybody I know is dead.
I'm not, Lula said.
Myron considered that.
You're right. You want to do nicky-nacky with me? It's been a while, but I think I can still do it.
You better be talking about some kind of card game, Lula told him.
We need to go now, I said. I'm kind of on a schedule.
Listen, Missy,
Myron said.
I'm not going. What part of not going don't you understand?
I hated capturing old people. If they didn't cooperate, there was no good way to bring them in. No matter how professional and respectful I tried to act, I always looked like a jerk when I dragged their carcass out the door. It's the law, I said. You're accused of a crime and you have to go before a judge.
I didn't commit a crime,
Myron said.
I just got a refund. This quack dentist made me false teeth. They didn't fit. I wanted my money back.
Yes, but you got it back at gunpoint.
That's because I couldn't get an appointment to see him until January. Couldn't get past this snippy receptionist. When I went in with the gun, I got to see him right away. It's not like I have forever to wait for money. I'm old.
What about the teeth? Lula asked him. Where's the teeth?
I left him with the dentist. I got my money back, and he got his teeth back.
Sounds fair to me, Lula said.
The court decides what's fair, I said. You have to go to court. Myron crossed his arms over his chest and narrowed his eyes.
Make me.
This is gonna get ugly,
Lula said.
We should have left this for Barnhart.
I'll make a deal, I said to Myron. If you come with me, I'll get you a date with my grandmother. She's real cute.
Does she put up her nicky-necky?
No.
Criminy, Lula said to Myron. What's with you and the nicky-necky? Do it by yourself and get it over with, just like the rest of us.
He's not real big, I said to Lula. Probably about 160 pounds. If we hog tie him, we should be able to cart him out to the car.
Yeah, and he don't have no teeth, so we don't have to worry about him biting us.
You can't do that to me, Myron said. I'm old. I'll have a heart attack. I'll pee my pants.
Lula was hands on hips.
I hate when they pee their pants. It's a humiliating experience, and it ruins the upholstery.
I cut my eyes to Myron. Well, how do you want us to do this?
I gotta go to the bathroom before you hog-tie me,
Myron said.
Or else I'll pee for sure.
You've got 3 minutes, I said to him.
I can't go in 3 minutes. I'm old. I've got a prostate the size of a basketball.
Just go. Myron trotted off to the bathroom, and Lula and I waited in the front room. 5 minutes passed. 10 minutes. I went to the bathroom door and knocked. No answer. Myron? Nothing. I tried the door. Locked. I called again and rapped louder. Shit. I need something to pop the lock, I said to Lula. Do you have a safety pin, chicken skewer, knitting needle?
I got a bobby pin.
Lula bent the pin open, shoved it in the little hole in the knob, the door unlocked, and we peeked in. No Myron in the bathroom. Open window.
He gets around for being he's so old, Lula said, looking out the window.
This was the second time today I lost a skip through a window. I couldn't even categorize myself as incompetent. I had to go with pathetically stupid.
Now what are we going to do? Lula asked.
Ordinarily, I'd walk the neighborhood and try to ferret out my skip. Problem was, I had Lula in her yellow spandex, and we were way too visible. You could probably see Lula from the space shuttle. I'm going to drop you at the office, and I'm going back to work for Ranger, I said. Morelli told me the crime lab was done with your apartment. Is your landlord replacing your door?
I don't know. I got to call and find out.
I drove past the bonds office twice before pulling to the curb to let Lula out. I don't see anything suspicious, I said to her. I think you're safe.
This has been another disturbing day, what with those two assholes looking to kill me and finding out that I'm fat. I might go back on that bacon diet.
The bacon diet is unhealthy, and you had packs of dogs chasing you down the street when you were on the bacon diet. All you need to do is control your portions. Stay away from the donuts and only eat one piece of chicken or one pork chop or one hamburger at a meal.
That's ridiculous, Lula said. Nobody eats just one pork chop. I'd get weak and die.
Lots of people only eat one pork chop.
Who?
Me.
Huh, Lula said. That's un-American. How am I supposed to stimulate the economy when I'm only eating one plain-ass pork chop? Probably I can't even have gravy on that pork chop.
I made sure Lula got into the office without getting shot or decapitated, and then I pulled my map out of my handbag and started another run through Ranger's accounts. Morelli called a little after 4.
We found the town car, he said. It was parked on a side street near the bank center. Easy to spot since it had a bunch of bullet holes in it. No blood inside. I don't know how she always manages to miss her target. It's uncanny.
Owner?
It was stolen from a car service last night. The lab guys are doing their thing, but that car has been handled by half of New Jersey.
Thanks. I'll pass this on to Lula.
Is she with you?
No, I dropped her at the bonds office. I'm riding a circuit for Ranger right now.